Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Today brings Charlotte's fourth and final Club World Cup match to Bank of America Stadium. It kicks off at 3 o'clock. The city's first Club World Cup match was on June 22nd, with popular Spanish team Real Madrid defeating Mexican team Pachuca in front of a near-capacity crowd of 70,000-plus. It's the second-largest turnout for FIFA's month-long tournament so far. The second and third matches here, even with brand-name teams Bayern Munich and Chelsea, were played to half-capacity crowds. Extreme heat and a weekday afternoon start played a role, too. The 32-team men's tournament has faced criticism over ticket prices and potential immigration sweeps across the country. With the much older national men's team version of the World Cup headed to the U.S. next summer, much is at stake. And for Charlotte, the question will be, what are the city's chances for hosting more soccer events? Here to discuss those topics are Julian Berger, WFAE's race and equity reporter; Craig Depkin, he's a sports economist at UNC Charlotte's Belk College of Business; Steve Goldberg covers soccer for the Charlotte Post's Queen City Football Chronicle; and James Labar is chief economic and community development officer at Charlotte Center City Partners. Try fitting that on a jersey. Good morning and welcome to you all. So, Julian, I want to begin with you and the political aspects of the FIFA Club World Cup. Just before the first match was played in Miami, U.S. Customs and Border Protection posted a message on social media that agents would be, quote, suited and booted, end quote, for World Cup matches. It was later deleted, but give us some context on why this was controversial.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing here is just the fear of mass deportations we've seen since President Donald Trump and his administration came into office in January. There's been a larger presence of ICE in communities, a larger presence of ICE at large events. The biggest example I can think of is in Charleston, that there was a nightclub where ICE went to and they arrested around 80 people. So seeing this post, a lot of people in the immigrant community felt a lot of fear. It was a very vague post, so we didn't exactly know if they were there to detain people or if they were there to just help police and law enforcement control the crowd and all of that. So it just led to a bunch of fear and anxiety within the broader immigrant community.
And safe to say that part of the reason for this, beyond what you just mentioned, is so many soccer fans are from Hispanic communities, Latino communities that have been targeted elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, I think the when I think of soccer in Charlotte, I remember last year I was at the Copa America game, Colombia, Uruguay, 80,000 people filled Bank of America Stadium, and they were all Latino and all, you know, for the most part, immigrant, you know, not sure what status they had, but a bunch of different statuses, whether undocumented, having their green card, having visa. So seeing this post and seeing that ICE or Customs and Border Protection is going to be at a soccer game is scary for a lot of people in the immigrant community.
Now, leading up to the Charlotte matches, the Charlotte Observer, WBTV, and WCNC, among others, reported that Customs and Border Protection would not be at the games. They quoted a spokesperson with the same statement. Here and elsewhere, though, there was uncertainty over what ICE would do, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So what has happened? Any arrests? Do we know any presence?
Not that we know of. There is a source, you know, within from the city of Charlotte that I've been speaking to that there was a fear that ICE would be here at the games, but not that we've heard. There hasn't been anything that's happened yet.
So this issue resonates beyond actual enforcement. You know, the possibility of enforcement stokes fears. You just mentioned there are other examples in other venues. Hector Vaca of immigrant justice organization Action NC told WBTV, quote, "Everybody is angry. The immigrant community is also very concerned," end quote. How prevalent do you think that sentiment is? Even anecdotally, what are you hearing?
Yeah, I think it's causing the immigrant community to live in fear. I think, like you mentioned, soccer is a big part of Latino culture. A lot of Latinos enjoy going to the games, going with their families. And so having an ICE presence at you know, an event like this, it is scary and it causes people to not want to go outside of their homes and partake in something that's supposed to be fun and enjoyable.
ICE and Customs Border Protection, they're regularly part of security at large sporting events, Super Bowls and things like that. You alluded to it a little bit earlier, but how and why is this one different? Is it simply the political moment?
Yeah, I think it's more the rhetoric. When somebody hears ICE or Customs and Border Protection, you know, they're like, oh no, like, are they going to be checking for passports? Are they going to be checking if I have a visa, green card, whatsoever? So I think just the moment we're in to hear this, for CBP to post something like this, it's just scary for everybody.
Yeah, let me just ask you about that aspect. Since you're covering this issue so closely, when you saw that social media post, what was your reaction? What was your thought?
I mean, I was alarmed. I think, you know, it is expected that you're going to have police and law enforcement there at any large-scale game. But to have a post like that saying that they're going to be there, it's something we haven't really seen before. And then to have it deleted, it caused even more fear as well.
What's your sense of whether this has affected ticket sales here or elsewhere? Obviously, they've had some smaller crowds. Do you think this is playing a role at all?
Yeah, I mean, there isn't real concrete, you know, data or facts that we know about that. But I do think it has led to a decrease in ticket sales, especially within the Latino and immigrant community. Those demographics are not really going to the games or because of the fear.
I'm curious, since we have a full-time soccer team here, Charlotte FC, the MLS team, any sense of whether that is now a concern at Charlotte FC games for Hispanic or other communities that could be affected?
Not that I know of. Not that I've seen Charlotte FC. I know they've been away for some time and they haven't had a home game in a while. but I haven't seen anything related to them.
And the other aspect I'm curious about is, obviously, we have a lot of soccer here, but we have all kinds of sporting events. We have concerts, those kinds of things. You mentioned the incident down in Charleston. Is this kind of the new normal, unfortunately?
Yeah, concerts, sporting events, festivals as well. People are just scared to leave their homes. And if it's not for work or school or anything like that, a lot of people are kind of laying low this time in the immigrant community.
Got it. Any other thoughts before we let you go on the Club World Cup and how the immigration issue is affecting that?
No, nothing else. I think the biggest thing is we don't know if have there been any arrests, but I'm sure later on we'll get more some concrete information about that.
Julian Berger, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
All right, now we're going to put the rest of our panel to work. Craig Depkin, let's begin with you and potential economic benefits. Last summer, when Charlotte hosted the Copa America, which Julian just mentioned, the match between Colombia and Uruguay broke the record for single-night hotel room sales in Mecklenburg County, eclipsing the Georgia-Clemson football game from 2021. What kinds of expectations are realistic for Club World Cup, do you think?
It's a good question. I think the expectations would be that hotel sales will be up, registration will be up on the day before and the day of the match. Evidence we have from previous research is that people do show up. Typically the day before, they'll stay the day of, and then the day after is when they leave. So maybe you get two nights of a hotel for a particular match. Other events we've seen in Charlotte do entail more hotel stays. So NASCAR is the big one. But we've seen other events such as the ACC tournament and the CIAA tournament where we see hotel registrations increasing for multiple days during the event. But these events do draw people from around the region. So that's the biggest key is if everybody lives in Davidson, they're not staying overnight in Center City per se, unless they don't want to drink and drive. But if you're coming from outside the region, you know, from the region, then you're coming into the Center City and staying for that night before the match and usually the night of.
So a pretty good bounce for the hotels and the restaurants should be expected.
I think that's right. I mean, the key though about the restaurants is when the match occurs. So you said today's match is at 3 p.m. So 3 p.m., let's say it's over by 5, that's a great time to hit Center City for a dinner Celebratory drinks if you want to. But if the match is held at 8 o'clock at night, then the dinner service is probably curtailed a little bit. So it depends on part in part when the match or when the event occurs.
Perfect segue to James LaBarre with Center City Partners, who loves to hear the notion of people having pregame cocktails and meals and postgame and anything else they want to do in Uptown spending money. So, James, with that, I know one of the things you do is you track how many people visit Uptown and when and why. How does international soccer fit into that?
Yeah, great question, Eric. And yeah, it's going to dovetail exactly what Craig was talking about. So when we look over the last several years here since 2019, we've had 11 to 12, depending on how you want to count them, international soccer matches. Seven out of those, so more than half, they register in the top 20 for Uptown days receiving the most visits. So if you think back to, and what's cool about those international games is they run across a variety of platforms. You have international friendlies. So think women's national team or men's national team. Also, when Charlotte FC was getting up going and did a club play friendly with Chelsea. And then you have some of those international matches, whether it be the club FIFA World Cup or the South American tournament that came with Uruguay and Colombia. So across that, those all those different venues, international soccer definitely makes an economic impact just in the sheer number of visits coming into Uptown, registering in those top 20 numbers for most of the matches, which is a great sign for economic drivers, vibrancy, culture, you know, a sense of belonging for lots.
I'm Eric Spanberg, and this is Charlotte Talks. James, go ahead and finish your thought there.
No, just that going to your first piece about Charlotte being a welcoming place, that's like a really key component that a place needs to be able to develop a sense of belonging. It's a really important core economic asset for a city.
Steve, you've been to the first three matches, and you're going to the fourth today. How does what you've seen compare to expectations?
Well, for the big games, when you bring a Real Madrid, which is basically the LA Lakers Showtime of global soccer, you're going to get a crowd wherever you're at. The other games have been good. The heat has definitely been a factor with 3 o'clock start times. A lot of the fans are actually been watching from inside, you know, the parameters of the stadium on TV because it was just so hot in the seats. But they were great. Even in that first game, I didn't think there were a lot of Pachuca fans there, but they made themselves heard. Mm-hmm. And maybe some lesser attuned soccer fans also joined in the Olé chant when they were passing around Madrid for a bit, which you wouldn't do against your own team. But it's been great. Charlotte has been a soccer city for decades now.
And now people are just becoming aware, the broader population and people beyond Charlotte.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have people, as James was talking about, that when Liverpool played here the first time, you have people coming in from hundreds of miles away because it's the first chance they get to see a club like that. And now with Real Madrid and Bayern, Chelsea back for the third time, they were just here last year to play Real Madrid. Now Inter Milan's here for the second time. Fluminense, it's the first time for a Brazilian club in Charlotte. And then Pachuca, which is, you know, a 120-year-old Mexican club.
We need to take a timeout, but stay with us for much more on the Club World Cup, and we'll hear more from Steve on what he's seen at the stadium. Up next, right here on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Our topic today is the Club World Cup, the men's soccer tournament that has been newly expanded to 32 teams playing for $1 billion in prize money. It's owned and operated by FIFA, the governing body that is bringing the Men's World Cup of national teams, started in 1930, to the U.S., Canada, and Mexico next year. We have a panel of experts here to discuss Charlotte's role in the current tournament. Steve Goldberg covers soccer for the Charlotte Post. James Labar is head of economic development at Charlotte Center City Partners. And Craig Depkin is a sports economist at UNC Charlotte. Julian Berger of WFAE joined us earlier to discuss how immigration policy factored into this event. So, Steve, we were talking a little bit about the crowds. Real Madrid, obviously, is SRO no matter where they go, and that held true in Charlotte. The last match is today, as you mentioned. It kicks off at 3 o'clock. It's going to be very hot again, breaking news there. And these two teams aren't quite as well-known. So what do you expect crowd-wise and environment-wise?
It'll be above, 20,000, maybe even above 30 because of just the nature of the game and such. I mean, in the three games so far, there's been like over 129,000 people. It's been an average of 43,000 per game, which is above the average for all of the games through the first round. FIFA announced that 1.7 million tickets had been sold through all the first round games. That was an average of about 5,000 per game. So as they said, Charlotte delivers when it comes to these matches because it's easy to get to through the airport and the highway system to get here. You have plenty of hotel rooms now, and soccer fans will travel, but you have these are smaller countries that these teams are coming from, and also these are not national teams, so you may get some just from the countries, but these are people who follow the clubs here, not so much teams. So especially with the Brazilian teams, most of them are arch rivals.
Steve, what about, we've heard a lot about ticket prices across the country. Here in Charlotte, same story. They've fluctuated a lot. I think, for the Real Madrid, probably $100 and up to get in. Then for some of the other matches, maybe 40, 50, 60 to get in, and stair-stepping up from there. You're around sports a lot. How do these prices compare with other events of a similar scope?
Well, the face price was high to begin with. That's definitely a FIFA thing. They put a premium on all of these things. And I would say they're probably overpriced for the amount of supply they had to go with the demand with teams that are lesser known to start with. So, for Real Madrid, tickets were going over face value for some of these other games. Even a team like Bayern Munich, you could sit in the lower bowl for $50, given the heat and the fact that, where the game was happening on, on a weekday kind of thing. So that's, it's the laws of supply and demand are definitely in play here.
James.
Yeah, really good question. Steve brought up a really good point. It's a Monday. And so what's really cool about this game, and then we're in so it's Monday, and we're also in the week of July 4th. And so there's a rhythm to urban centers. So there's definitely a rhythm to Uptown and South End. This week is usually a lower visited week for Uptown because a lot of people go on vacation this week, take the entire week with the, especially with the holiday built in during the week. So this game on a Monday will probably be one of the best Mondays that we got going on, even though it's July 4th week. When we looked at that past Tuesday, when Bayern came, there was 130 to 140,000 visits for a Tuesday, which is a better Tuesday than our standard. And so everything's context. So this club FIFA World Cup game, international visitors coming in on a Monday during July 4th week is a much needed pulse or a catalyst for a variety of things, whether it be hotels, small businesses, and everyone else that plays in the hospitality sector.
Craig, I mentioned the Copa matches earlier. In the past 2 months, Charlotte has had the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, two nights of the Savannah Bananas baseball with 148,000 people in attendance. Now we have, obviously, these four Club World Cup matches. Where does Club World Cup fit in, you think, for bringing awareness and tourism to the area?
Good question. We have no evidence at this point. So
bad host. Bad host.
Yeah, give me back to me in about a year. I'll have some data. No, I think what you're saying is generally what we've seen from previous research of myself and Frank Stevenson, who's at Berea College, focusing specifically on Charlotte. Given the vast array of events that happen in Charlotte, and I'll say this: there's destination tourism and then there's event tourism. So destination tourism, I kind of where I grew up in the Chattanooga area, there are definitely tourist attractions, whether it's a national battlefield or Rock City, and people go there for that purpose. And Charlotte, again, I live here, it's fine. Not so much a destination place, but an event-driven tourism. And we find strong evidence of that, as Steve and James are saying, that people show up for the events, whether it's concerts or even Broadway shows and other events that take place in the area. And I say NASCAR is one of the biggest ones, but PGA is a big one. And I think these soccer events are going to turn out to be a big driver. We have some evidence from previous research that they do drive tourism, but they were maybe 10 years ago. So those data might be a little bit dated in the sense that they may be smaller impacts. As Steve was saying, that now that Charlotte, again, unfortunately, I think we're not part of the World Cup mix next year, but in terms of just regular international, whether they're friendlies or actual events of import, people realize that Charlotte is a kind of a soccer center. And that's interesting because, again, historically, I mean, St. Louis would be the other one you would pick of, and maybe some of the upper Northwest. But the fact that we are, rivaling Atlanta for those type of crowd levels, that's impressive.
Steve.
And while we're not getting the World Cup next year, the fact that the Copa America put a semifinal and a third place game in Charlotte is of no small consequence. That we have two round of 16 games in the first FIFA Club World Cup of this size is no small matter of consequence. And I can't speak to what Tepper Sports and Entertainment has done to help facilitate some of these coming in, but I do believe that David was very bold and with MLS and putting Charlotte at the top of the list to get Charlotte FC here. And the fans have turned out for that. We're second only to Atlanta in attendance since 2022. So people know Charlotte is not being confused with Charlottesville and Charleston anymore like it was. I'm a native. We used to be jealous of Greensboro.
James, on that note.
No, I think this great conversation. So, and in regards to picking my reference, it sets us up for FIFA Women's World Cup. All right, FIFA is definitely known for like testing sites, testing countries, testing venues, and then using infrastructure in order to like layer on further tournaments. And the FIFA president definitely made that known when he was bringing around the trophy. On the economic development piece, I think there's some really one, these types of experiences, events that's happening at Bank of America Stadium is really key to how urban cores are transitioning everything since the pandemic, right? From a central business district to a central activity district. So you got to have places where different activities can happen. So Spectrum, Bank of America Stadium, Knights Stadium. So all those things are happening. Then the other piece here is like you got to have events and programming, and that takes partners. So, Steve called out Tepper Sports, Hornets, CRVA, Sports Foundation, layering all these different programs using the venues in really different ways, going towards that central experience or central activity district piece. And these components of like that our city's not boring is a really important idea for a talent attraction, right? There's spillover effects when people come to visit, but then more, probably more importantly, is talent retention, right? What makes a city sticky? And these types of events enable us to do that and retain the top talent that every employer, that every job is hunting for.
That's the voice of James Labar. He's with Charlotte Center City Partners. Also with us is Craig Depkin. He's a sports economist at UNC Charlotte. And Steve Goldberg, who covers soccer for the Charlotte Post Queen City Football Chronicle. James, I want to come back to you as you're talking about economic impact and keeping activity alive in a city. What are you hearing so far? As Craig said, we don't have a lot of numbers yet because this is still going on. But anecdotally, what are you hearing from hotels, restaurants, other businesses about what they've seen and experienced so far with these first three matches?
Sure. Like the response has definitely been positive, especially during sometimes slower summer months, right? Those southeastern cities kind of run into heat and humidity on that aspect. But and so these games, since they're international brands, whether it be something like LA Lakers or New York Yankees, like Real Madrid, or something with a lot of heritage that's got like strong cultural connections like Pachuca, they bring in visitors that normally would not come into Charlotte. I also believe that we've also heard that it enables people from the region that are driving distance. So think within 100 and 150 miles to gain that that sense of home, that sense of belonging, connecting with others. We've gotten a lot of reports about people coming to visit people that live here in order to go to those matches. So again, the economic data will take a little bit of time to process in regards to hotel rooms and revenues and receipts. But the vibrancy on the street is palpable. People wearing all the kits from different teams on a Monday, on a Tuesday. And then the Real Madrid Pachuca game was amazing for a Sunday for Uptown and South End Charlotte.
James, you mentioned 150-mile radius. Is that the sweet spot for regional tourism, or what is it if that's not it?
It's definitely within driving distance. Sometimes there's different ranges for that, 150 to 200 miles. But I think that 100-mile radius is an interesting one, just with a recent data point that within 100 miles of Trade and Tryon, there's more than 8 million people that live, right? Because it picks up the Triad area. It picks up Columbia, South Carolina, and obviously the Charlotte Metro, and even picks up a little bit of Spartanburg. So that's a really interesting, and that's more people than the 100-mile radius of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And so people don't understand about like what that sort of like labor visitation shed is and how primed Charlotte is to take advantage of that. And again, we have the venues and the partners to bring that piece off.
The late Max Mulliman is smiling from above. He was the sports consultant that kind of hatched that whole regional idea to bring the NFL here, and that worked out pretty well. Steve, Charlotte got serious about soccer in 2014. I think you mentioned Liverpool played AC Milan in front of 69,000 fans in a soccer friendly, as they call it, and that played a big role in Charlotte landing the team that became Charlotte FC, subsequent exhibitions. I'm curious, how do these matches help the MLS team now that they're here and vice versa?
Well, it expands the audience because some of these teams will bring on, you know, more of the nouveau fans who have come into the game. Soccer had long been a participation sport and doing very successful with that through the youth soccer aspects. Now it's become, you know, a major spectator sport, you know, in the top five of U.S. things. And this is what's drawing to it. We now have generational soccer experience in this country, you know, dating from the 60s up. You know, from the 80s forward, soccer's been the number one youth sport. And those are now parents and even grandparents. So when I'm walking into Bank of America for a Charlotte FC game, it's not just kids I'm seeing. I'm seeing people, you know, in their 80s who are coming because this is a big event. It was very much like when the Hornets came in 88. That was the thing to do in Charlotte. It was a place to see and be seen. And that's what Charlotte FC has become now. It's a different soccer experience. We have a lot of variety of them because with the Carolina Ascent, which just won the regular season of the USL Super League.
That's a professional women's team. I'm sorry, go ahead, Steve.
Yes, they put 10,553 people. They packed out Memorial Stadium, probably the first time that the new build of the stadium has had that many people in there. And it's been great. We also have the Charlotte Independence and then the Crown Legacy. There's a variety of soccer experience to be had here.
And a little bit of that, I think what you're getting at is perhaps converting the hardcore, maybe more European soccer fan. Maybe they come to the stadium and think, hey, I'll give Charlotte FC a chance.
Yeah, there's definitely soccer snobbery where people believe, you know, who are EPL fans, they don't think MLS measures up. But the truth is, if you love the game, you can find it on every great level. Where Craig works at, you know, UNCC, Charlotte 49ers, they've been in two College Cup finals. They've been a relevant soccer team since the late 70s. And that's what I'm saying about Charlotte didn't become a soccer city with you know, Charlotte FC. We've been one for 40 years, you know, the Carolina Lightning winning the ASL championship in 1981 in their first year.
So a lot more history, I think, than maybe some people recognize. And of course, we have a lot of new people coming here. It's now, I think, a local law that we have to say 117 people a day, not one more, not one less. I'm Eric Spanberg, and this is Charlotte Talks. Craig, David Tepper appeared at a press conference in April with FIFA President Gianni Infantino, and I think, as James mentioned, very strongly encouraged him to award Charlotte Women's World Cup matches in 2031. What do you think the odds are of that happening?
Oh, I think it's pretty strong. As has been mentioned here, I mean, the Charlotte region is strong supporters of soccer. Especially, I think, with women's soccer, I was at an Ascent game, not the 10,000 person match, but about maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people that match. And it was a great experience. A little bit smaller than going to B of A, and so a little bit easier in and out, but it was a great experience. And I think, again, kind of regionally comparing us to Atlanta and DC, those are going to be the two big comparisons. I mean, we match up perfectly with them in terms of the venue and access. And as was mentioned, like, the idea that Charlotte has become this event-driven tourism center, I was not aware of the 8 million people in the region, but I'll totally buy that. driving in Concord. But no,
you're making James happy.
But you're tapping into a kind of a large potential market that is, I mean, I'm trying to think of anybody else that have that type of regional draw. Dallas-Fort Worth, I mean, Atlanta in the immediate area, sure, but I mean, yeah, you're going to find very few city centers are going to have the venues, the hospitality, the access, both with driving and with air, that would match Charlotte.
And what you want to do is get in line with like Atlanta, where you're just naturally part of the mix, right?
I think so. I mean, I think we're already there. I mean, you can see what's happening with the concert venues. You know, that's ticking up in recent years, and that where people are drawing in access. We're not here when I was here 20 years ago.
We need to take a quick break, but we're going to pick up that thought and talk a little bit about what could be in store for Charlotte with a strong performance with Club World Cup and what other kinds of soccer and other sporting events might be keeping an eye on the Queen City. Stay with us. We'll have much more with our three panelists right here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins. Our topic today is FIFA's Club World Cup, the 32-team men's tournament that includes four matches at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. The final Charlotte match kicks off today at 3 o'clock. We have a panel of experts breaking down what's happened so far and what it means for soccer here going forward. They are James LaBar from Charlotte Center City Partners, Steve Goldberg, who covers soccer for the Charlotte Post, and Craig Depkin, a sports economist at UNC Charlotte. WFAE's Julian Berger was with us earlier discussing immigration policy and the Club World Cup. Steve, you mentioned a couple minutes ago the Carolina Ascent, and I think you wanted to share a little more context on how women's soccer figures into everything that's going on as we look ahead to the 2031 Women's World Cup possibly coming here.
Yeah, true. Given where the matches that we've had going up, I would be very surprised if we weren't a venue for the Women's World Cup, because Charlotte is exceptionally strong as a women's soccer city as well. The Carolina Ascent proved that this season from a team point of view, but Claudia Dickey, who went to Charlotte Latin and then to UNC, just made her first start for the U.S. Women's National Team. We have the Ascent have a variety of locally grown players. Vicky Bruce, captain on that team. Cannon Clough, who also went to Charlotte Latin. Bea Hilton, who was an academy player, who has now signed a pro contract, actually through her father, Andy Hilton, who played with the Eagles. Has been called up for the England U-17 women's team. So we're global in that aspect. But there's more players. But the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill has set the mark for women's soccer dating back to 1979. They won 21 of the first 22 national championships.
That's pretty good, so, by the way. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And that was expert commentary there.
Go ahead.
And they just won their most recent college cup this past season. So women's soccer in Charlotte, in this state, in this region, South Carolina, and around, this is a very, very vibrant thing. And this would be a fantastic venue for the Women's World Cup.
Steve, for context, for listeners who are not following soccer day by day, why isn't Charlotte part of the 2026 Men's World Cup?
I think when those decisions were made, some things had not evolved to the point where they are now. We had not hosted Copa America. We had, you know, this event with the Club World Cup had not happened. So even though Charlotte has been strong in all of the ICC matches and other international friendly matches that have gone here, we've now proven what we can do when matches mean something as well. We can do the hotels are here. I mean, this is all stuff that's going to build to something that this city truly covets, which is going to be hosting a Super Bowl at some point.
There he is. He's on record. He says the Super Bowl's coming. James, a big part of the appeal of these events, as you and others have said, is generating the tourism spending from visiting fans. Soccer in particular, as we've touched on, brings an international audience. And you mentioned, you know, a lot of people, maybe they have international roots, but they live 100 miles from Charlotte, they come in, they see family, or they just come in, period, because they want to see their team, their country. What kind of benefit is that for Charlotte, you think, bringing that international aspect into it?
It's huge. So from a very traditional standpoint of looking at, the tourism sector as part of an economic development strategy, it delivers upon place branding first, right? That your city is a place to visit. You have the certain assets. It is a place that is very welcoming, right? There is a growing percentage of people that are born in another country that now live here. And there's a ton of international or foreign direct investment that is occurring across Charlotte, very strong roots with Germany. But as our airport continues to deliver more direct international flights, economic commerce out of Europe, South America, and Asia is on the rise. So that element of being a welcoming place, we see it in other economic development conversations about a company that's looking to invest here. And does it have those things where someone very quickly can call this place home? And those events in those stadiums at the arena, again, at Truist Field, enable that thing to happen in order for that place to be sticky, where people feel a sense of pride. It gets better with age, and that sense of belonging in that place. Like those are the things that when cities are measured across, like what are the stickiest cities? Those are the questions people ask in these types of events, especially international soccer, especially women's soccer, really deliver upon those points.
Craig, I'm curious, I've mentioned and we have discussed attendance a lot. Real Madrid did really well. The other two matches, not as much. There were circumstances, and we've seen that in other cities. Overall, seems to be a pretty good performance so far. But what does a city and what does a venue have to do to prove themselves as successful hosts? What are event organizers and sanctioning bodies looking for?
Okay, a bit outside of my field, but I think the biggest thing we've seen from the academic research is what was mentioned earlier. So access is the big thing. So in certain urban venues, access is not very easy. So I would just say, like, if you went to Wrigley Field in Chicago, like, access is not that easy. It's a great venue. It's a beautiful cathedral to baseball, but getting there is not so easy. Parking is not so easy. If you think about Bank of America Stadium, access is fairly straightforward. Even if you had to park at 7th Street Station, I mean, you're only a half mile away, whatever. It's like, it's not that hard. So I think that's the biggest key is access. The second would be, as James was saying, kind of the welcoming environment. So that would be everything from weather to crime to dismay on the streets. And so Charlotte doesn't have those issues, at least not at the level of some cities. So that makes access easier. And I'll say this too, especially about soccer, is that it wants to be family friendly. And if you go to European football matches, not so much all the time. It's getting better, but I think here we've maintained in our soccer environment much of what we have in other sporting environments is that you can wear the jersey of the other team right next to somebody else. There's not going to be hooliganism and fights. We don't have stewards that are carting off sections of the stadium. So that, I think that's a very different environment, which is very welcoming here in the United States versus when you go to Europe and see events where it's like, oh, you can't show up wearing somebody else's jersey or you're in trouble.
James.
One of the things we talk about in regards to cities are, and I'm going to make the translation to venues here in a second, but it's about airports. And one of the key aspects is like an airport can never be done. It can never stop growing, right? And like it's a really
We're
bad
definitely
sign.
living
Like,
up to
oh,
that. We're living up to that right now, James.
no, we're like the epitome of the airport that's always trying to keep up and under construction. We make the argument that if it's done, you have a growth and economic opportunity problem ready to emerge. Same thing with stadiums, right? They're always transforming. They're always being invested in. So we had a really great investment from our public sector, coupled up with Tepper Sports, in order to bring Bank of America to upgrade it, to reimagine it, in order for the venue of the future. As fans and players and people that work in the stadiums, those sort of pieces change over time. And so we will have one of the best positioned stadium. We already have an amazing one now, but after those upgrades go in, we will have one of the best positioned stadiums, not only inside the building, but as it connects to the urban fabric, as everything that Craig talked about, walking from light rail, coming in from different submarkets, whether the uptown or south end.
James is referring to the $800 million that's been committed by the city and the team to renovate Bank of America Stadium. That's going to start next year and probably wrap up in 2030. Steve.
And a unique aspect of soccer, well, to going with what Craig was talking about, there's our American cities where wearing the other team's colors are can be dangerous too. If you've ever been to a Philadelphia Eagles game and you were with the Panthers, you know what I'm talking about. But there's a tribalism to soccer that is inclusive. It's embracing, especially in this country. Whereas you go to a Panthers game, there's going to be a lot of people wearing the same jerseys, but they're not together. When you're at a Charlotte FC game, those people are together. We have a super strong supporter section, but before the game, when everybody's turning their back to the field and doing the Poznan, which is a chant made famous in Poland, they're all doing it together, and that's part of the experience coming in, and it's a collective experience where people are doing this together, and that's one of the unique aspects of what is making, soccer, football so popular in this country. It's different.
Steve, something that's maybe not different for those of us that live in the South, but certainly for European soccer teams and soccer teams from other international locations is the heat. And we've heard a lot about that this summer with the matches here and elsewhere. There was a 2-hour weather delay at Bank of America Stadium on Saturday because of storms. And the Chelsea FC manager was not pleased. He questioned whether these matches should be in the U.S. Earlier in the week, when Chelsea was in Philadelphia, they had to cut a practice short because the temperatures were nearing 100 degrees. So that's a long buildup to how much of a factor do you think weather has been with this World Cup, both here and elsewhere?
Yeah, well, Maresca, he's not wrong, but he knows better. Television drives when these games are on and such. And it, save for, and that's definitely a European-centric point of view. When the World Cup in 2002 was in Japan and Korea, the games were going from 10 o'clock at night to, the next morning. I worked those games for ESPN with their highlight show here in Ballantyne. I got jet lag without even leaving Charlotte. But I believe there's no way these games should have been played even with the TV times. There's no way for the safety of the fans and the players. There's no way they should have 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock start times. Even 6 o'clock, the sun is still going to be up in some areas. And that's the brutal factor with this. That's they have hydration breaks and stuff, but you could see it just even in the first half of the Bayern Benfica game, when Bayern had heavily rotated their squad. And these are players who want to make the, a point to play more and get more minutes. And they were not playing with the urgency, which ultimately led up to, you know, Bayern not finishing top of that group. But yeah, playing in this heat, this is where FIFA has to, and others have to understand that, yes, the money, the TV times is important, but safety is a higher priority.
Craig, I asked you a question a little while ago, and I led into it with the PGA Championship and the Savannah Bananas, and then we got into the Club World Cup. That's all in the past 2 months. We've also had NASCAR races. We've had playoffs for the Carolina Ascent, which Steve mentioned. The Charlotte Checkers came within two wins of winning their championship, and that just wrapped up. Then we have the ongoing seasons for Charlotte FC and the Charlotte Knights. Soon enough, the Panthers are going to be back. We have several major college football games, and then the Hornets will start in the fall. How is Charlotte managing all of this demand for ticket buyers and suite buyers and sponsors?
Another good question outside of my immediate expertise, but what we've seen, again, just kind of looking at the historical records based upon our research, is that Charlotte does a very good job of both marketing and managing these events. So they tend to hit above their weight in the sense of, again, if you mentioned them, I think it's the Mayo Kickoff Classic, mm-hmm. that's Charlotte against App State. And, you know, that is expected to sell more tickets than you would expect. Mm-hmm. It's in B of A Stadium, a great venue and a good draw for people around the state and the region to see, again, kind of two mid-tier football teams, but to play in a big venue like that, that's going to be exciting. I think, though, what we've seen relative to cities like Austin and Atlanta, Miami, that Charlotte tends to draw more people on a kind of a per event basis, which suggests to me that, again, whatever infrastructure is in place at all the venues, at Spectrum, Bojangles, B of A, and up here at Charlotte Motor Speedway, that infrastructure works pretty well.
Got it. Yeah, we certainly have no shortage, and it clearly is part of not only the tourism strategy, but I think the city building strategy, which is to use major sports as an anchor, as a hook, as James was saying earlier, certainly for employers and for employees to keep people here, to attract people here so that they know that there's always going to be something to do and somewhere to go, and that it is a city that is exciting and has life. So certainly I expect to see more of that. I'm Eric Spanberg, and this is Charlotte Talks. James?
Yeah, just that one piece there, right? So when we think about it, it's having the hardware and having the software. We have all the hardware in the world in regards to the venues and street grid, light rail, hotels, small businesses, big businesses, in order to different submarkets, in order to feed that and make sure it's a great living experience. The thing that we need to keep going, because the software always changes, right? How do we close multiple streets at the same time? How do we send the right signals out to those small businesses to get prepared in order to, like, hey, what will the numbers be today on this Monday? Because usually Monday, even small businesses are even closed or taking like a light labor day in regards to staffing. So how do we broadcast those signals? How do we make that experience for everyone that like visits here, all the 35,000 residents that live in Center City, and all the people that work, to make sure that like they can get to work easily, they can leave work easily. At the same time, those fans are coming in and out of the stadiums. That, I think that is the Rubik's Cube that never changes in urban centers, and it takes a team to do it. And I think their teamwork will take us a long way on that piece.
Steve.
And also wanted to add that from the business sector of Charlotte, the city is also becoming very influential. You might notice that Bank of America is a lead sponsor for the FIFA Club World Cup. And Bank of America, I did a story for Charlotte Magazine years ago about how they lead when they were sponsoring Major League Baseball and other things like that. They're not just sponsors. They also finance a lot of these teams with loans and stuff. That's something that Hugh McCall and his team, they blazed a trail for big banks to get involved with sports investment. And then you have Ally, which is the major sponsor for Charlotte FC on the jersey, but they're also been super influential in women's soccer with what they've done with the NWSL.
And that will have to be the last word, but there will be much more to discuss about soccer in Charlotte, as you can tell from this conversation. My thanks to Julian Berger with WFAE, Steve Goldberg from the Charlotte Post, Craig Depkin from UNC Charlotte, James Labar from Charlotte Center City Partners, and I'm Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal, in for Mike Collins. Thanks so much for joining us for Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.